Here's the deal. Callers here, like all our guests on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll get to football segment number two. Let's get to the biggest game in town this weekend. No, not the Purple and the Lions. That will draw more interest, obviously. And I'm very intrigued about the game. But game four tonight, WNBA Finals, Liberty leading 2-1 over the Lynx. Matthew follows this team closely. He writes about it. Let's start with this stat. And I talked about this yesterday with Jim Pete. The Lynx in the lane in game three, obviously an extraordinarily close game. Inescu's shot was brilliant. Lynx jumped out to a big lead. It was the repeat from game one, except the teams were reversed. The Lynx, as you know, in the lane were 16 of 40. For a team in the finals, that's atrocious in the lane. The Liberty are the bigger and more physical team. Is the 16 for 40 to you, Matthew, aberration? It's going to happen? Or was this indicative of the Liberty's will and size having more of an effect as the series has moved along, acknowledging that all three games with 2 minutes to go were pick 'em and either team could have won?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think there were several times, probably more than several, where there's nobody around the Lynx player and they just missed it, which may have been them being nervous about those pterodactyl wings of Breanna Stewart. I think she has something like a 7'1" wingspan, and it looks that way. And she's not even the tallest player on their team. That would be Jonquel Jones. And I think that those two have sort of struck some terror into the Lynx. And look, I don't subscribe to blaming the refs for things, okay? But when you look at the fouls, and I ran through this in an article that I did, when you look at the fouls called, there's just no way in a prison rules type of series that this has been that the Lynx only got fouled, I think, 12 times or 12 free throws in that game. There's just no way. I mean, I think that the referees have really, really let them play, probably on both sides, but it stands out a lot more when you have the bigger team guarding the smaller team and making it difficult. But, you know, that's part of the thing that you have to answer with the New York Liberty. And, you know, one of the ways that they've been so good at getting to the basket is by spreading the floor, getting Breanna Stewart and Jonquel away from the paint. But the problem was that when they lost Alanna Smith, who's been one of their most valuable players, I think, when she went out with an injury, foul trouble was part of it as well, they just didn't have the ability to spread the floor the same way, because Smith is a very serious three-point threat, but Myesha Hines-Allen really isn't. So I thought the Liberty did a good job of making that adjustment and really playing the paint more. And the status of Smith for this game and how healthy she is going to be a big factor. But, I mean, I think overall, probably when they look back at that tape, it's just pure regret. I mean, there were so many transition buckets. The stat that blew my mind was that they caused like 16 turnovers by the Liberty and scored 8 total points off turnovers.
That's horrible. That's
just not going to work, right?
That's
so
horrible.
Many chances.
Yeah,
and they let that one get away, man.
Okay, so let me push back a little on officiating in this way. I watch a decent amount. You watch more the WNBA than I, but I'll say this. If you're the physical team and you're consistently the physical team in this sport compared to the Lynx, who are more of a ball movement, space and pace team, if you're more physical and you have more size and you play that way all year, I think it's just natural that you're going to get more of the benefit of the doubt than the other team. Is that a fair counterpoint?
No, it is. And when you look at the numbers, the Liberty have been exceptional at not fouling this year. And
which is a great skill, right? I mean, that's a huge emphasis.
It is. And the Lynx actually draw the second fewest fouls per game in the entire WNBA. So this is not a team that attacks the rim and gets to the foul line that often. Even Nafisa Collier only gets about 4 to 5 free throws per game. Normally, she does a lot of her work with those little fadeaways and things like that. At the same time, having been there and in the stands and watched it play out, I thought, how in the world did Breanna Stewart get two fouls in the first quarter and never commit another infraction for the entirety of that game? But what I'll say is that both teams' normal fouls per game are down. So I think that it's just entirely the league saying and the ref saying, we are going to let them play. We want the best product of back and forth basketball. We are not going to spend all night at the foul line. And if that's how they're going to play, then you have to adjust. I don't think it's an excuse, but it was a factor. I would put it that way.
For me, I've actually loved how the officials have stayed out of the way. You know, there were some borderline calls. In fact, there were just some wrong calls in game one, but I love letting them go. So let's talk Stewart a little bit. We know Stewart is one of the three or four best players in the game and has been at pretty much any level she's been at. In fact, most levels, she's just the clear-cut number one. She goes for 13 straight at one point, game three. She gets 22 of 30. Was it just Stewart being Stewart, or did the Liberty do anything different to create a little bit more space for her?
I don't think that they did. I think that what happened there was, you know, Breanna Stewart, she does have a championship ring in her past, but she was also kind of part of a little bit of a leadership duo with Sue Bird in Seattle. It was kind of always Sue Bird's team, and Breanna was like the younger player who was coming up. But last year was so embarrassing for the New York Liberty to lose the way that they did to the Aces. They didn't really even put up that much of a fight. The Aces had a couple of injuries they didn't take advantage of. And so we've spent about 360 days talking about, hey, you know, did the Liberty really have that player who's willing to take the bull by the horns, take the reins, be that person? Or is it a little bit of, oh, you do it kind of thing, which is what happened to them last year. And I think what Breanna Stewart said, and she was shown on the sideline saying, we're not bleeping losing this game. And I think that she just decided, if I don't do this right now, then it's not going to happen, and we're going to lose this series and fall behind and have to play again in Minnesota, and that's not going to be too easy. So I felt that it was really Breanna Stewart just raising the level of her play. I don't think in the playoffs she's been very good so far. Even though they got here, she was only still, even after a great game, she was only shooting 41% for the entire playoffs, and her shooting had been really off, I thought, for the entire postseason. But it seemed like there was a I will not be denied
yes.
type of attitude that she took. And that's just
with skill.
Players of all time do. Yep. And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do when a player yep. like that gets hot and starts hitting shots. That said, I mean, the Lynx, that last minute of the third quarter, I mean, they were up with, I yes. think, a minute 20 left. They're up 9 points. You just can't let that happen. So,
Dave, I think what Matt Caller there said was Stewart should be cut by the Liberty before the game. Is that
yes,
what you?
That's exactly
about what
I heard.
Let's send mm-hmm. that over to Liberty headquarters. All right, this game will be a must-watch tonight. Game four from a sold-out Target Center. About a mile down the road on Sunday will be a sold-out U.S. Bank Stadium. The undefeated Vikings against the team which still might be the favorite to win the NFC, the Lions. Let's talk Lions and Purple with Mr. Purple Insider himself, Matthew Caller, when we return on WCCO. A fixture of Fridays when you subscribe to purpleinsider.football is the mailbag. I thought a number of very good questions today, and one of your responses surprised me a little bit just by how high the percentage was. Someone said, okay, with the Lions and Vikings playing Sunday here in the Twin Cities, give us the percentage that we might be staring at the NFC championship game, you know, months ahead down the road. You went 25%. I mean, that's a 1 in 4 chance. And I get it. The Vikings are undefeated. The Lions' only loss was a surprise to the Buccaneers. But 25% is awfully high when we're talking middle October. Why go that high of a number and believe in these two teams in late January, either in Detroit or Minneapolis, are going to meet to see who goes to the Super Bowl?
Well, certainly in a few weeks, if they melt down over like they did in 2016, then that percentage will drop significantly. But as of right now, I mean, I don't think you can look at two teams with better resumes than this for sustainability. I mean, the Vikings have beat the toughest teams on their schedule already, including at Green Bay, which I thought was an incredibly impressive victory. And Detroit has the best offense in terms of points per game in the entire NFL. Also, I was looking this up the other day. Maybe we'll circle back to this depending on the result. But teams that get to 7-0 have basically a coin flip chance to go to the Super Bowl historically.
That was a great stat.
Yeah, that's there's a little pressure on the Vikings to get there over these next 5-6 days when they play two quick games. But, you know, I think when you look at the Vikings' point differential, what they've done on defense, the players that they have, and the player that they're getting back in T.J. Hockenson on offense, I fully understand, and I think it's completely fair for people to wonder, can Sam Darnold really keep doing this? But go through the rest of the roster, go through the coaching staff, go through the atmosphere that they have in their home building, and I don't know, what am I supposed to look around the NFC and say that San Francisco, it's 3-3, is better than this team, or Philadelphia, Washington with a rookie quarterback? Who's supposed to be better? Green Bay? They were up by how many points against Green Bay down there in Lambeau?
Right.
So I just can't find any evidence right now until they show it to me that these two aren't the best teams in the conference.
A reminder on Matt's stat here, because I don't want that to be lost in this conversation. Teams in the Super Bowl era start 10-0, okay? 42 teams. 10 of them.
7-0.
What's that?
7-0. You said 10.
7-0. My bad. 7-0. 10 of them, because I was thinking about the 10 number. 10 of them won the Super Bowl. 10 of them lost the Super Bowl. That's, as he said, that's basically half made it to the bowl. Let's stay with the Lions, at least one more question. The horrifying injury that hopefully you didn't see, but the impact on Aiden Hutchinson, who at the time most likely was the best defensive player in the game, playing the game right where he's ferocious with the pass rush, but he wasn't getting crushed against the run, I don't believe either, at least from stats I saw earlier. Maybe it changed. And he breaks a leg. It just was awful to watch. So it's not a one-man team. It's the team sport. We're going to hear all that. But reacting and trying to recover from that presence, how different is the Lions' defense without that monster, and how do the Vikings attack the Lions differently without Hutchinson as the opponent?
It is so wildly different with him and without him. I mean, with him, you have meetings about one guy. I mean, you have coaches sitting in rooms for hours going, how can we design every play with blocking him in mind? That's how good he is. I mean, it's very similar to Nick Bosa. It's very similar to Brian Burns, but I think he was playing even better than either one of those two guys. You can't just say, okay, Brian O'Neill, just go block him. I mean, as great as O'Neill is, that is an entire plan in itself to shift protection in that direction, to get running backs, to get tight ends, and now it's gone. And there's no player on this roster that is going to come anywhere close to that. That doesn't mean the Vikings are out of the woods, though, because they also have two great interior players. And I think we know that always and forever,
yes,
you and I, we better talk
Ed
about the other team's defensive tackle.
Yes. Ed Ingram is coming up, either directly or indirectly.
Maybe, because I am curious. Kevin O'Connell mentioned potentially bringing Dalton Risner onto 53. And I think that the patience for the right guard has started to run out for Kevin O'Connell, with the number of times that plays have just been blown up. And I probably mentioned this stat to you, but Ingram has a worse pass blocking efficiency rating than Dakota Dozier and Tom Compton. And those are the two guys that drove us just as crazy. So I would not be terribly shocked at some point if we see Dalton Risner, but that's where the mismatch is if Ingram is playing, which is Alain McNeil, DJ Reader, two massive dudes. They could get after the passer, and I think that it's still a problem. Plus, Aaron Glenn has blitzed a lot. He is one of the highest blitz rates, especially on third down, so they have to be ready for that. But it's a very different defense without Aiden Hutchinson. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, Cashman is out. Jones, Risner, Hockenson, Phillips, Jones, all questionable. Let's get to Hockenson here because he's hurt against his former team on a play, and I know we're making it harder and harder for defensive players to tackle big athletic players. But man, when one of their legs is planted and the guy goes low, that's how players suffer the injury Hockenson did. I just felt like from the verbiage and the timing that this was a week where Hockenson waits one more week. I mean, and then I heard Hockenson yesterday say, I'm better at everything now. You know, I'm faster, I'm stronger on all the metrics. So what is your sense about Hockenson playing and how important is it for Hockenson to play? And then at the end of that, button up with Aaron Jones and what you're thinking about his availability.
I'll start with Aaron Jones so I don't forget. My game pick has rested on his status, and it looks like he's going to play. That's how it feels right now. So I think the Vikings can win the game. I think he's that important. I think that he's been the MVP of the offense through the first 5 weeks and just does so many things for them that if he's back, they're in good shape offensively. As far as TJ Hockenson goes, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know that Hockenson is desperate to play against his former team, that he would love to go lay a block or two on Kirby Joseph, probably catch a touchdown, maybe do the gritty in the end zone in front of the Lions. But at the same time, I've just gotten to a point with this group, with O'Connell, with the training staff, where whatever they decide to do is probably the right thing. And putting the amount of strain on him to come back and play two games in 4 days just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that it makes way more sense to have him play a Thursday night football game, then get a week and a half to recover, then get back into that weekly grind. I mean, he has been out of football. He could say, and you're right, yeah, of course, it's like the Tommy John surgery guys who say they throw faster.
Yeah, right.
That's probably just because your body's been rested in a lot of other areas is why you're doing that. But I think that it makes a lot of sense to wait another week. As big as this game is, maybe they could put him in for some sort of package, play 15 plays or something. I don't know. But I think it's probably better to play it safe, put the strain on his body for Thursday, and then give him an extra rest to come back. Because, like we were just talking about, I mean, what the expectations are for this team. It's not one game against Detroit.
No.
This isn't all in, all or nothing, risk anybody's body. This is you're expecting to try to win the NFC, and that is a marathon and not a sprint.
Okay, let's talk Jefferson. Hot take, Justin Jefferson, good at football. Jefferson, yeah, I know, sit down, I probably should have warned you. Justin Jefferson is amazing at football against the Detroit Lions. If it's his stats, wins, not so much. I think it was our guy Seifert who had the totals for Jefferson in his first 8 games. That Justin Jefferson as a receiver has more yards against the Lions than anybody else has ever had in their first 8 games against any team. Schematically, player-wise, outside of the fact he's just a phenomenal player, why has he been so dominant against Detroit?
Well, number one is Detroit. That's probably the number one, is they have just been, yes, you know, not always the best.
Yep.
They tank. They tanked. I mean, his first couple of years, they were losing basically on purpose. So that's part of it. They have taken years to try to rebuild this defense. And this year, they got Carlton Davis. So I haven't seen his status yet, but he was on the injury report. That could be a huge one to watch. Tarrion Arnold keeps committing fouls constantly. The WNBA refs wouldn't call him for it, but the NFL refs do. He's got 8 penalty flags for either holding or interference. That's something to watch. But I think they just haven't had many good corners. And if you don't have good corners, you get roasted. But another part of it, too, is I constantly see Aaron Glenn talked about as a great defensive coordinator, but I have not seen the actual evidence of that. And O'Connell, and even before him, Clint Kubiak, Gary Kubiak, they just seem to be able to take advantage of a very, I think, static type of defense that lines up and plays their stuff. And Jefferson, if you give him opportunities to get off the line of scrimmage, to get play action down the field, I mean, he's just going to rip you up. And the other thing is, too, that last year Nick Mullins did not know how to throw to anyone else, so he just threw to Jefferson every time, and it was awesome, kind of.
I'm going to end up watching most of this game after I record it. I'm playing golf with Harrigan Sunday at 12:40. Do you want to have somebody fill in for you with Purple Insider and play golf with us Sunday at 12:40? I mean, it's only going to be 80 degrees outside.
So here's the thing. My last round the other day, I thought, didn't know where the weather was going to go, and I thought this could be my last round of the year. I birdied the last hole on a beautiful chip over a little hump. It rolled like I had guided it right up to the cup, tap it in, and I'm like, I don't think I could play again this year.
Tiger Woods has now joined us, Harrigan. I mean, I didn't remember.
Tiger Woods circa 2002.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was a good round. I'm saying I ended with a birdie, and I wasn't sure if I should actually play again until next spring.
Here's what you do. You reach out to one of your Purple Insider diehards. They step in. If it works, all of a sudden you have a Matthew Collar double. So, like, if Sloan needs you to get groceries, you don't want to do it, you go to the double. You know, if you have to go to some party, have the double. Have the clone go. This could be your experiment. Also, you could have it on your phone, you know,
yeah,
while we're there.
Tweet out a couple things that everyone else is tweeting out anyway.
Yeah, it's just fine. Steal. I mean, you know, I mean, just plagiarism right there.
This feels like Larry David on his wife's birthday, where he's like, "Are you sure we can't just play nine? Like the same thing for the first couple of quarters. Maybe I could just fit in nine and come back for the fourth quarter."
Exactly. All right, man. We'll be paying attention, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Chad.
PurpleInsider.football. He's great, and he was outstanding on the links to Matthew Collar. Am I wrong? It's basically just I'm out of gas. We assume you're not listening, and that's why we put it on, you know, at 2:46 on Fridays.
Tell that to the local politicians who love it.
That is true. There's only one prominent politician who has reached out to me recently, or maybe ever, and said, "I love that segment," and that's Am I Wrong? It's next. Davis here, representing the committee. What do you have first? What absurd, foolish comments do you want to throw at us?
Well, first of all, I should put a button on the final moments of the previous segment with Chris Eggert during the break, texting me that this is also his favorite segment. So, big time politicians, big time media celebrities, and you get to us 5 minutes late. That's fine. That's fine. The committee is not upset.
You're good in short segments.
You've got the worldwide leader, ESPN, on here in the studio.
Oh yeah. Well, we have CNBC, we have Fox, and we have CNN.
Yeah, and you bounce around.
I bounce
depending
around
on the day.
Yeah.
And,
yep. Is there any golf on?
That's a great question, and I don't know.
Let me go with some meaningless golf.
Spend your time just, you know, not paying attention to this. During a break, a couple breaks ago, they were showing
PGA Tour Championship Dominion. Here we go. This is big.
About an hour ago or so, they were showing the post-game press conference of Sean Payton last night, coach of the Broncos, after his Broncos walloped the Saints 33-10.
What a jackass he is.
Of the utmost degree. Absolutely. The Saints, of course, who he formerly coached, won a Super Bowl with.
Yep.
And as they were showing his comments about whatever, they flashed this on the Chiron below him. The 23-point margin of victory last night for the Broncos was the third highest for a coach going against a team he previously won a Super Bowl with.
Oh, my God.
That, right there, the most meaningless stat ever produced by the leader.
Am I wrong?
Statisticians in sports have taken it way, way too far. Now, some of the baseball stuff will just blow you away. You know, yesterday, Otani and Mookie just have a crazy game, and instantly, through the modern metrics, some people are telling us it's the greatest playoff game back-to-back hitters I've ever had.
Yes.
Right? And they just have access to every game that's ever been played, and boom, it's right there. You know what also works in stats sometimes? Nothing. And, okay, we have on – let's just look at CNBC right now. Look at everything that is on the screen for CNBC. You barely can see the guy's head.
Ulta Beauty's down today.
Yeah, Ulta Beauty. We got the closing bell. We got
DoorDash is up.
Dow. We got text speeder. We got the time. Every once in a while, you kind of want to just be able to see the person talking.
Or, nice.
If that's the graphic, the third largest point spread when you matched up with your former team that won a Super Bowl, if it turns out the ones ahead are like 450 and 220, like they were really big blowouts, then it's kind of germane. If not, who cares? Is he, which Minnesota opponent is viewed as most loathsome right now that is still in the mix is coaching or playing? Because it's a double shot. It's actually more times because they played him a lot, right? But obviously it's the Bounty Gate.
Yep.
And then it's the when he's doing the skull
mm-hmm.
and the miracle. And now it's the Bo Nix. We did the rope-a-dope, you know. He's got a healthy, healthy, healthy opinion of himself.
Oh, and far just, healthier than it should be.
Oh, my.
I've always thought he's overrated. That's me personally. For me, that's just the hate.
For me, it's let's judge him without Breeze. And so far, now they're off to an okay start. Nix, I mean, he's had some moments, but he's also had some really bad moments.
I watched a little bit of the game last night. Those two middling rookie quarterbacks going against each other, just awful at times.
Spencer Rattler looked terrible. I just saw highlights.
That's all you needed. There weren't many.
You know me. I enjoy my sports, but obviously Q had the seizure, so that was the big thing. But I wasn't, you know. First of all, it wouldn't have mattered what. I would have been hanging in bed with Quinny. But I wasn't thinking, oh, what a tough break. I'm missing Bronco Saints. You know, and there's plenty of games. They're Vikings Lions. Is that number one, or is the Super Bowl rematch number one for the national audience?
It's got to be the rematch just because it's got Mahomes and Kelsey and maybe Taylor's going to be there.
Yeah.
But this is the best game.
This is the better game. The Chiefs have the same record as the Purple. I'm not writing off the 49ers. So that game, yeah, I want to see that Broncos Saints and dumb graphics about that jackass. No, I'm good.
We made it, Chad. We have made it once again.
Us?
We, the collective
oh,
we.
Oh, the collective we.
The entire state of Minnesota, because we have made it to the biggest scam week of the year ever put upon the people of this great state. How educators convinced the state to go along with the idea that they all just, it's fine. They just get a 4 and now more than likely 5-day weekend a month into the school year.
Mm-hmm.
A month before, we'll get another 4 or 5-day weekend at Thanksgiving. 2 months before, we'll get a couple weeks
at
Christmas.
How long have they hated teachers?
It's the greatest grift that has ever been pulled. Donald Trump can't even touch it. Part of the deal on this one. And if some teachers, you know what? Here's an idea. If we really need to confer, if we need to come up with some new strategies, teaching methods, I'm all for it. Maybe in July.
Am I wrong?
We call it the Susie Jones week on this show because Susie's always finding a way to take days off.
Laura, she was here more this week.
Laura talking about where she's working harder and working more days to make up for her vacation days. Susie just goes into Lindsay and scares him and takes 60, 70 days a year off.
I assume that's how Laura messed up on her days. Susie hacked into her and stole 5.5 days.
That's probably right. Yeah, the idea that this is a conference where we're learning all sorts of information and we're changing ideas, BS. Just call it a vacation. Say, you know what, we've decided, 6 weeks in, everybody needs a break. And apparently everybody needs to go to Puerto Vallarta because you can't get to the airport right now. We're going to come back, and normally it's just Jason. We're going to include Dan because Dan is in tomorrow for Shaletta. So Shaletta's out. God knows she's stalking someone else. And so Dan, for the first time, Dan Cook, gets to host a show. If it works well, I'm taking full credit. If it's Albert Brooks-like, I've never met the guy. That's my policy right now. What do you think of that?
That's been your policy for many, many years.
It really is my policy overall in life. If it works out well, point the fingers at me. If it doesn't work out well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
You sound like Sean Payton.
Thank you. Am I wrong right now with Dave Harrigan? Our guy Cook is a part of it because Dan on Saturday is Shaletta.
Wait, what?
Yes.
What?
You are Shaletta.
Excuse me?
So you should go stalk maybe your nephews in the bushes.
Do I got to buy a bunch of billboards now?
You know. Okay, so you're filling in.
Yes.
Room to three. How do you feel about this?
Pretty good.
Yep.
Pretty good. Yeah, I got a pretty decent handle on what we're going to do and how it's going to go. And I'm sure, you know, the second you open the microphone at noon tomorrow, all that goes right out the window. We'll have to figure it out. But no, I feel pretty good about it.
I identified my policy, Jason, before.
Hmm.
We heard.
I said, if it works, I'm taking a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And if not, what a dumb idea.
Well, I mean, he was a producer for you for how long?
Two times.
Two different times, yeah.
Yeah.
And
five?
Shows I'm a glutton for punishment.
5-6 years, would you say, somewhere in there?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took about 2 years of him working with me to get over the trauma.
Yeah.
And then...
Now he's trying to leave
have
you.
The courage to step up and host.
Yeah, now he's trying to
leave. He sees you. That any ding-dong can host a show when he works with me.
Yeah.
You had him convinced it was some sort of, you know...
Science.
Yeah.
You know, rocket science. You know, it's very
SpaceX-like. Well, when you look at that
SpaceX-like.
When you look at that sheet that you have in front of you every day, I mean, you need to have a doctorate to be able to decipher it. It's like hieroglyphics.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Well, that sheet that I do write, only I can read my handwriting. Yeah. And as Dave and Dan know, when I'm calling and said I want you to print these stories, about 20% of the stories, I'm like, I can't read my handwriting. Is that about right, Dave?
Yeah, and of the stories we print, you get to about 20% of them.
Yeah, at the most. Yeah, at the most.
Well, Odyssey thanks you.
I'm against Big Wood.
I just want to – I'm going to move us right past that one. But I do want to offer a compliment to Dave Harrigan, who volunteered his day off to come in and help me out tomorrow.
Yeah?
They're not even paying him. He just decided he wanted to come in and help me out.
There's no chance that's happening.
You don't think he's going to do that?
No. Yeah. Don't start the show until he gets here.
Okay. I'm going to be at a kid's Halloween costume party, and that sounds better.
Ugh.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Honestly. Given the option, I would come board up the show.
I'll be here.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, either you guys want to take the kids? I mean.
No. I think we're saying no.
No.
Very clearly.
I got to do the show. I can't. Otherwise, I totally would.
All right. What's next?
Do you have any more?
Yeah, let's go. What do we have?
I've got a lot going on. Well, let's actually get to one that's Halloween related because the Washington Post had a story yesterday saying chocolate is on the way out.
This is awful.
The kids don't want it anymore. The youth have changing tastes. Instead of, you know, that delicious, delicious chocolate, they're gravitating towards the significantly inferior candies, your gummies, your licorice, fruity, sour garbage. If this is the future of Halloween, I think we just shut it down. I think we're done. As a father of two who've got years of trick-or-treating left, I will not stand for sneaking into their bags and finding the garbage candy. No Nerds, no Skittles, no Sour Patch Kids, none of it. If I don't find the chocolate, it is not worth the hassle to get them out trick-or-treating.
Am I wrong? I'll go first and then defer to Jason. I'll just say this. I weep for America's future. If they're running from chocolate, I don't fear Halloween. I weep for the future of the country. If these kids can't figure out how delectable, delicious, and how chocolate needs to be at the top of the list. It was an okay run, but bringing on China and Russia, take over in about 20
years. We're done now. We're done as a country because the kids like Sour Patch Kids.
Yes,
really?
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
I think it's fine. Here's what the kids are doing.
They have awful taste.
They are thumbing their nose at Big Floss. Because the dentists always come out and they're like, oh, the worst candy is this. And the kids are like, you know what? Screw you.
They're going after Big Dental?
They're after Big Dental.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm eating what I want. I'm sick and tired of listening.
I'm not that principled enough.
To the man.
To turn away a frozen Snickers, which I love to lick, for a Sour Patch Kid.
Pardon? What is happening with you?
It's Friday on the show. No, can you tell?
That one's a callback to Wednesday.
That's a callback to Wednesday.
Nice.
We like to bring things all tied together.
Wow. You better listen to every minute of this show. You
clearly
might miss.
You missed why the Rena segment.
Yeah, shame on you.
I should show you the text. Also, again,
well,
among
look,
the pickiest eaters on planet Earth is
among,
now going to chime
among?
In.
Yeah. He's leading the tribe.
Hello. I'm carrying the president's card. Look. I think this is actually a good thing.
Of course you do.
And here's why. Because it makes parents like Dave's lives easier to go raid the kids' candy because all you do is go in and grab the chocolate. The kids don't care because all they want is the sour stuff and the super sugary
stuff. There's no chocolate in there.
Are you pandering?
No,
are
it
you
says that the kids are trending kids? Towards that. That doesn't mean there's not going to be any chocolate. There'll be chocolate.
So what are you giving, Dave? Because I went shopping for candy and I bought...
Already?
Already.
Too soon. It's October 18th.
I mean, I do have one box of full-size chocolate candy bars left over from last Halloween.
That's right. I forgot he likes to brag about Mr. Full-Size.
I'm not doing it anymore because the kids don't want the chocolate.
Oh,
they
So what are you giving them?
I bought, like, Haribo gummy bears.
Oh, goodness gracious.
He's giving out drugs in Maple Grove. Good luck to you.